and welcome to Tax Talks. I'm Sharon Ferris at CEREC, the Canadian Education and Research Institute for Counseling. Thanks for joining me for this series of discussions with authors of CEREC's new Career Development Practice in Canada textbook. We're happy to bring you insights from these thought leaders in the career development field in Canada. Today, we're speaking with Sandra Boyd and Kim Spurgeon of Knightsbridge. Sandra is a principal and career solutions lead in the Toronto head office of Knightsbridge. Sandra specializes in career management, career transition, and the four generations in the workplace. She is the author of The Hidden Job Market and co-author of The Flexible Thinker Guide to Extreme Career Performance. Kim is a vice president at Knightsbridge. She is a certified coach who specializes in career management, career transition, and executive coaching. Kim and Sandra successfully developed and now co-lead the Knightsbridge Career Management Practice. They have also both been instrumental in building the career management frameworks we'll be discussing today. Sandra and Kim's chapter in the Career Development Practice in Canada textbook is on lifelong career management and looks at the changing world of work and the kinds of strategies that career practitioners can use with clients to help them manage their careers in this brave new world. Hello to both of you.
Hello.
Hi.
Wonderful to have you join us. So my first question is, by now, I think we all know that there is no longer such a thing as jobs for life and that we can't expect our career paths to be like those of our parents. But how has the approach to managing our careers evolved today compared with even, say, 10 years ago?
I think it's a great question. And what's the difference is since the Industrial Revolution, really what we did was we climbed that corporate ladder, and that was the structure. But that has certainly changed in the fact that when we went to work, and I remember my father telling me, get your foot in the door of a good company, grow with the organization, climb the corporate ladder, but you were beholden to the corporation as an employee, and in exchange for that, you were given tenure and financial stability, and hopefully at the end of your 25 or 30 years, you would get a gold watch. Now, the difference is that employees are expected and employers want them to own their career, and corporations are no longer the ones to tap you on your shoulder and say, you should be doing this or you should be doing that, or you should move up the next rung of the ladder or not. With that, though, when we were given the accountability, it becomes the responsibility of the employee to ensure that they know what they need to do in order to manage their career, as he can no longer expect that you will have a lifetime employment with one organization.
So you mentioned owning your career and how today this is the employee's responsibility. One of the comments that you had made in your chapter in the textbook is this distinction that you draw between someone's marketability and their employability. How would you say these are different?
That's an interesting question as well. It's Kim speaking now. I think the big difference between the two is a lot of people spend the time figuring out how are they going to keep their job? How am I going to stay here? How am I going to make sure I don't get become unemployed because I don't want to have to look for another work, another job or another place to work? And I think the important difference is marketability is really thinking about what skills do I have that are marketable in the organization I work today? And if I were to leave this organization or my job ended, how would I find another job depending on how marketable my skills are? So this is really about focusing on what skills are marketable or in demand in the organization and the economic demands that make it important for us to think about what are those skills and experiences we need to have versus how do I make sure I just keep my job? It's a completely different mindset around what you're trying to do in terms of managing your career and taking some ownership and hoping that things turn out good or actually owning it and saying, I'm going to make those decisions, and these are the skill sets I know that are going to be needed for the future of the organization I work today, so therefore I'm going to spend the time to get that skill, get that experience, work on that project, get mentored by these people in this other area of the business, so I actually develop the skills that I need for the future. So even if I end up unemployed, I do find another job right away because I do have marketable skills. So that's how we would see it very different from marketability is for the future, employed is, how do I think about keeping my job today?
That's a useful distinction. Now, one of the other things I remarked on is in the textbook, you make the following statement that employees are more empowered now than they have been at any time in the history of the corporate workplace. So that's a pretty strong statement. Tell me what leads you to conclude this.
This is Sandra speaking, and yes, it is a strong statement and one that I truly believe, and I know Kim does as well. And we were bold enough to actually put that down in the textbook because employees no longer have to depend on their employer to make any type of decisions about their career. They actually have the opportunity right now to determine in what direction that they want to go, when do they want to move. And I also believe at this time, we have so much more flexibility in the decision making around the process of our careers and how we want to drive our careers. We're no longer defined by tenure. We're no longer defined by age, even gender, for opportunities and jobs. For example, I remember when I was starting out, there were very few. You could be a teacher. You could be maybe, you know, a doctor. You could be a secretary. Now the doors have been flung wide open, and we can go into places that we never had the opportunity to go before. And there also seems to be different streams. Even you don't have to be defined by the fact that you're a leader or you're not, because there's this whole stream of knowledge experts within corporations that, you know, they hold as much power in how valuable they are to the corporation as one as the senior leaders or other individuals with inside a company.
Now, something that readers of the textbook will note is that you've decided to write it from the perspective of the career practitioner themselves managing their own career. Why did you decide on this slant?
Well, the chapter is not written specifically for career practitioners. This is really the advice that we give is for any individual, regardless of age or stage, on basically how to manage their career. It's the frameworks that we use in this particular book is the frameworks that we use with all of our clients and how we recommend that everybody should be managing their careers. I do, however, believe that we have to better prepare our young people for a competitive job market, and that it's no longer just, you know, our job market's no longer just local, it's also global. And we're better to start with and give the right type of focus on careers to the individual who's responsible in preparing the next generation of workers and how they go out into the marketplace. And that is the reason why we have given specific advice to a career practitioners, because we do know eventually what they're going to be doing is giving this advice to our younger generation.
And I imagine that part of this as well is career practitioners taking their own advice when it comes to managing their careers.
Yes, absolutely. The shoemaker's children, very important.
So diving into some of those concepts that are included in the textbook, one of the first ones you describe is this idea of career fluidity. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it's one of the terms that we actually made up. I'm not sure there's actually any formal definition in a dictionary about it. I think part of the work Sandra and I, as we go through our experiences working with organizations, is everybody was hoping for this perfect description of what career success looks like in an organization, that we're going to go up a ladder. And then people got past that traditional view of career development as going always up a proverbial ladder. Then they started looking at the ladder format. And the ladder in reality doesn't necessarily work for everybody either. So I think we came to a place where, depending on what stage and age you are of your career, whether you're going to speed up in terms of you're looking for more bigger opportunities in your career, or you're slowing down. It could be you've had a child and you're coming back to work part-time. And so during that part-time, you're not necessarily driving to work on the same projects you once did before. Or if you can see it, if there's the framework or the model that we have, it's kind of like the monkey bars where there's a beginning. You're always going to start your career somewhere, but there is no ending. People aren't retiring in your traditional format. I'm going to sit and play golf 5 days a week and not work anymore. People are working well into their 70s and 80s and probably will work part-time or do philanthropic or volunteer or some kind of other work during that time. So it doesn't have a set pattern that we used to have. And we still talk to a lot of organizations where they don't even use like the job paths that people have defined in the past. There used to be very clearly defined career paths. after you have to do step one to get to step two to step three from a promotion perspective. And we know today with organizations getting flatter, you no longer can have that straight proverbial upward pattern to create success. So what does success look like is different for everybody. And some of us might speed up for a while. We might slow down if we're having children or we're finding that we're working in a new area of the business and we need to learn it better. So there's all kinds of things that impact how we grow in our career, and it isn't necessarily one direct pattern. So when we show this to people, I think people resonate when they're not looking for the exact pattern as to what they need to do to get promoted or to define success in their career as they move through their career cycle within the organization.
So you mentioned stages and ages, and you touched on changing definitions of career success. So how today would you say that career management is changing for Canadians over their life cycle?
Well, it's Sandra speaking, and I think that's a great question. I truly believe that the foundation to career management, which is the five-step model we discuss in this chapter, it does not change regardless of age and stage. What does change is the way you dial up or down, dial down your career based on various life circumstances. You know, for instance, when you have children, that can certainly change your ability to be in the office for hours on end and work weekends and overtime and all the rest. Aging parents, sickness, getting ready to retire may change the focus of your work. You know, my own example is that at one point in my career when my children were younger, I had decided that I was going to take a number of years off and only work, you know, part-time as a consultant. And I just remember people saying, oh, you absolutely can't do that. You'll ruin your career. However, that was not the case for me. I was able to get back out there and dial up my career now that my children are in university and I don't have the same responsibilities as I did when I was home. So, when my children were younger and in school, and I know Kim did very much the same thing. So the life cycle of our career is ever evolving, but it has to do with what's happening within our own lives and not so much on how we manage our career.
So you're saying no matter where you find yourself in the life cycle, your five-step method for career management would apply. Can you talk to me a little bit more about those steps?
Yes. And, you know, there's five steps that we believe that help support strategically managing your career, regardless of the ups and downs of corporate Canada and what's going on out there. It's important that you understand it's you that keeps yourself employed and not the corporation, because the corporation is evolving all of the time, and a corporation that you're working for today may not exist tomorrow. And it's evolving quicker all the time. But the five steps that we recommend, the first one's about gaining insight. So who am I? What are my strengths and areas of development? The second step is about expressing value. How do I contribute to the organization? What are the current and future challenges that my team has, the manager, and the organization are facing, and how can I leverage my strengths and abilities where the organization needs it most? And also, with expressing your value, it also means that you need to know what skills do I need to develop in order to meet the future needs of an organization. Step three, Kim's going to be talking about a little bit more, and that's developing your brand. What do I want, and what am I known for? And of course, step five is building your network, which is, you know, the career, I think it's the foundation of career success. And last but not least, you have to identify your goals, and you have to also be able to share those goals with the corporation.
You mentioned a couple of things there that I wanted to follow up on. And one of them is the idea of developing your brand. And I think that's a phrase that we all hear a lot about today. But what does it really mean?
That's a great question, because I think sometimes people get it confused with other things. But if you make the analogy to brand and personal reputation, they kind of go hand in hand. They kind of equal the same thing. But I think the importance reason people people attach the word brand to it is it's really about, when you think about popular brands in the marketplace that you see on the TV, you see in every ad, those have a very mindful, purposeful structure and strategy around managing that brand. Unfortunately, in the reality of the workplace, as part of your ability to get work done and get known in the organization is you have to have a personal reputation that you manage. Not hope that everything goes well and passively wait for things to happen to you, but actually proactively manage how you show up every day, whether that's in a meeting, with the way you dress, the way you talk, the tone, what you deliver on, the people you interact with, all impact how people perceive you. And the better you're known for, the more visibility you have in the organization from a brand perspective, the more likely you'll be chosen for opportunities to develop further, get involved in interesting projects, and be known to be adding value to the organization. So our philosophy is really around, you know, everybody has a personal brand or reputation, and it's important that we choose how we manage it, how we make decisions around how we interact in the work environment, because it contributes to how successful we are in our careers.
And another building block of that career success within your five-step model is the importance of building your network. Now, today, with the advent of LinkedIn and other social media, I think our concept of what a network is has changed. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, it's very interesting. If you think about how we used to network, the good old visual of using your Rolodex, you go through your Rolodex on your shelf and you start booking meetings with people to get to know people. But I think people often assume networking is attached to looking for a new job. And unfortunately, your network is what helps you get work done as well in an organization. And how well connected you are is going to help you get it done faster or quicker. So with social media, we've really found your ability to connect with people within the organization or externally has really grown substantially, that people don't have a choice whether they're on social media. They have to be on social media. The things like LinkedIn are really critical for people in terms of staying connected to whether it's their colleagues, their customers, their vendors, or suppliers. A lot of people do it through social media. So it's really critical that we have a face. What's really important is when people network, that same face needs to show up whether you're at a conference and networking, whether you're at a social event within work and networking, or whether you're on LinkedIn and you have a profile there. So it's really important that we think about our when we network, it all needs to show up with some consistency, similar to a brand. There needs to be consistency in your messaging and how you communicate and interact with people, and it comes across in every social media forum that we have today. And it's really critical that people can choose not to be part of it, saying, no, that's new technology, I don't want to be part of it. But in reality, you'll be left behind if you're not utilizing social media as part of your network and your ability to expand your network. And again, it's back to your visibility around people knowing that you're out there and you have some knowledge to share with individuals within or outside an organization today.
So if you had to give listeners a couple of really practical tips that career practitioners could share with their clients, either around how to build your network or how to develop your brand, what would you suggest?
I'll take on that question then, Sandra. What I would suggest people do is think about some keywords from a brand perspective. So I'll start with the brand first. The keywords from a brand perspective, what are keywords that describe you? What are you the go-to person? Why do people come to you in the organization? So it's really important to think about what are you well known for. And I'd get out there and ask people, you know, when you think of Kim Spurgeon, what do you think of in the marketplace? Or what do you think about Kim when you think about her in the organization? What is she known for doing and what does she do? So part of that provides a framework to start building your brand. Now, the good side and the bad side, that helps you build it, but also if you're known for things you don't want to be known for, you're known for your Excel spreadsheets, you're known for things that you don't necessarily want to be known for, what are you going to do about changing that? So that's really critical. From a networking perspective, I would encourage people to find ways to network and have lunches and coffees with people in the organization outside their core team. Like, do you go to the lunchroom and have lunch with the same people every single day? You go into the coffee room, do you talk to the same people every day? You need to find a reason and build into your weekly or monthly calendar to get out and meet people. So you might have worked with somebody for 20 years, but have you actually got to know them in terms of what kind of value they bring to the organization? So I would encourage people to put some networking goals in terms of people expanding their ability to meet more people and diversify who they know. Is it all people in marketing? Is it all only people in finance? Or is it across the organization that they actually know them? And find a way to build some meetings and times to have a coffee meeting or lunch with people throughout the organization.
Those are some great suggestions. Thank you. One of the things that we've been talking about is the idea that employees need to own their careers, but of course, employers also have a role to play. And so Knightsbridge has developed a career management model that encapsulates this in a three-way partnership. Can you describe how this partnership works?
Yes, a three-way partnership approach, it builds and supports career accountability. So the employee is accountable and the manager and the organization enables and supports the employee. With these three elements, they work together as part of a well-defined plan. It improves, for the employer, it improves engagement and retention and retraction. And what it does is it allows the employee to have ownership of their career, but at the same time, they're still being supported by an organization. And the one thing that's with the partnership is that everybody really needs to understand what their roles are. So corporations must be able to allow the employee to take control of their career, and the employee, what they need to do is they need to incorporate things for managing their career, the five steps and the advice that Kim just gave on developing your brand and networking throughout and across the organization.
So that three-way partnership is really essential.
Absolutely. It is essential to the success of an organization, and also it is essential to the success of an employee. And I think it started, you know, this really started to creep up, and when downsizing and right-sizing and merging and acquiring started to come into being in the corporate world probably in the late 70s and early 80s, when you started to see the erosion of the corporate structure, what started to happen was people started to be downsized from their jobs that they'd been into for 20, 30, 40 years, and then all of a sudden they were blindsided by this, where they expected the corporation to look after and take care of them. And then they started telling people in the 80s, okay, now you need to manage your own career. What really, really came into fruition, what we started to see in the last decade is, yes, you can tell people to manage their own career, but if you don't tell them how and you don't provide them with support and you aren't partnering in that management of a career, nobody's going to be successful, not the employee, nor will the company or the leadership within the organization be successful, because you lose the opportunity to engage your employees if they don't understand what career development is and what the opportunities are within the organization for their career development.
And from the work that you've been doing at Knightsbridge, working with employers across Canada, how well would you say that this partnership approach is working?
Well, I think that some organizations are certainly doing it a lot better, and I think that there are many people that still don't believe that they're the ones that have to manage their career, not because they don't want to believe it, it's because a lot of times they don't know how to do that, and no one said to them, here are some of the steps that you have to follow, nor are organizations actually telling them that, yes, we're going to give you permission. On the other hand, we see young people come into the marketplace for the very first time with wonderful education, background, part-time experience, and all the rest, but they too don't know how to navigate through the organization and understand what it takes to make themselves successful within an organization. What are the key attributes? What are the things that the actions that they have to take? So it's just, I think that right now we're in this sort of in-between stage where everybody is learning what the new norm is.
And still some learning to be done.
But it's great opportunity. Employees, as I said in the statement that Kim and I made in the textbook, is that there's no other time where employees have been more empowered in the workplace than they are right now and in the future to come. And I think, you know, that a lot of organizations are starting to realize that they are not just competing locally for talent, but they are competing on a global basis. So they're wanting to do whatever they can to help employees understand what their role is and to guide them and support them in career management.
So lastly, I know you undertake some of your own research at Knightsbridge into career management trends, and I saw a recent report from you that talks about this new career normal, and it raised a couple of interesting points for me. So the first is around the practice of job hopping, and that working for organizations for these 1 to 2 year stints is actually on the rise. And job hopping, I think, used to have quite a negative connotation, but the report suggests that this is increasingly no longer the case.
Yeah, I would say that that is probably true. If you think about 10 years ago, even if somebody only stayed a year or two in a job, it was considered very negative. Like, why isn't there any stability? Why don't they have any loyalty in the organization? And I would suggest today, loyalty isn't necessarily regarded the same as it once did. I think people become loyal to themselves and what are they getting out of their career, and if it's worthwhile, they'll stick around as long as they see value. And I think the important thing that organizations, and that's where there's a bit of a disconnect between employees and employers. Employees want to make sure they're getting something from a career development, and leaders or in organizations just want to make sure they get the work done. And sometimes you've got to give a little on the career development side to create that retention and engagement on the employer. They're not going to stick around. And so the 2 year stint, so the 1 to 2 years, doesn't have the same negative connotation. That means somebody left to get more opportunities for development. But I don't think there's anybody today, and that was used to be tagged with younger generations. I would suggest 40 or 50 year olds also don't stay longer than 1 to 2 years if there's an opportunity to find good development for their career elsewhere. So I think it's a whole new trend that is not specific to one generation.
So you just raised something now that relates to a second finding that really stood out for me. And that was how employers who want to recruit and retain top talent are having to, as you say, work harder today to provide career opportunities for their people. And in particular, the report talks about young employees, even at the interview stage, wanting to know what further opportunities an organization can offer them.
Yeah, part of it is probably culture, and part of it is the different generations of today. And I think people ask for what they want today, and they didn't necessarily do that maybe 20 years ago. But I think the important part is people say, if I'm going to invest here, it's going to be a two-way street. I'm going to give you all I have to contribute to completing the job, but I also want to develop my career at the same time. And so I think people are being much more direct and upfront to say, love to join your firm, but you also need to tell me what kind of career opportunities I have. If I have to stay in the same role for 5 years, you're not likely going to keep me. So what some of the research has shown is that there's a lot of people leaving organizations after 2 to 3 years if they don't see an opportunity where they get a chance to develop, be mentored, get involved in exciting and interesting projects. At the end of the day, if they don't see that, they'll leave. But I do find people are much more likely to ask that at the beginning in the interview stage around that opportunity.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Sandra and Kim, for giving us an overview of lifelong career management. It is indeed a brave new world. So you can read more about this in detail in their chapter in the new CEREC textbook, Career Development Practice in Canada. Find out how you can get your copy at www.cerec.ca, and be sure to join us for upcoming text talks with other leading contributors to the textbook. I'm Sharon Ferris for CEREC. Thank you all for listening.